Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington, working on this program very remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Friday, March 4, 2022. Pastoralists killed civilians in eastern and central Equatorial states.
Yesterday, at around 5 p.m. in the evening, a barra bomber in Magui County was attacked by the cattle herders from Jongole State. 5 people have been reported killed.
And some women in South Sudan complain about harassment by some police and immigration officials at border checkpoints.
I have to reach out to a male. If it's not a male from the paternal side, my son was to be detained here until he misses that flight. Send them all documentation to show that I am not trafficking this child. But these people were not yet satisfied.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Authorities in eastern Equatorial State say cattle herders, mainly from Jongle State, killed 5 people in Magui County and 3 others in Juba's Lobono Payam of central Equatorial State. David Monodanga has more for VOA from Juba.
At a news conference held yesterday in the eastern Equatorial State capital, Torit, Eastern Equatorial Governor Louis Lobong said cattle keepers went on a rampage, killing unarmed civilians, burning entire villages and stealing cattle.
Yesterday, at around 5 p.m. in the evening, a barra bomber in Magui County was attacked by the cattle herders from Jongole State. 5 people have been reported killed. A number of houses got burned. A known number of cattle were also taken. After the attack on the cattle keepers by cattle raiders of Eastern Equatoria in Agoro last Sunday,
Governor Lobong criticized pastoralists from Jongole State for attacking and displacing members of the host community.
The community of Magui County continue to witness harassments, intimidation, beating and killing by cattle herders from Jongole State. This has created a fear among the peaceful people, farmers of Magui County. Many got displaced from their home to Magui County headquarters, and they are experiencing harsh conditions due to meager resources and insufficient facilities in Magui headquarters in terms of food, shelters, medical care, and water, etc.
A local chief in central Equatoria's Lobonok area, who does not want to be identified for fear of reprisals from the pastoralists, says cattle herders who attacked people in Abara village of Magui County also attacked his village and killed 3 unarmed residents.
There is a newly married woman with a 2-month-old baby. They beat the woman, snatched the baby, and threw it down, and they dragged the woman along with a 10-year-old boy into the bush, where they killed the woman. Now the baby is just there crying terribly.
The chief says the cattle herders also used machetes to kill one man and a teenage boy, who accompanied the man while the two were returning home from fishing. He says the cattle herders also looted the property of several villages. The chief says people of Kit village have been displaced to Kit River at the center of the Boma, where they are stranded without food or shelter. Governor Lobong condemned the attacks, urged the national government to intervene.
The government and the people of Eastern Equatorial State condemn in the strongest term possible this uncalled for attack and killing of the people in Magui County. We call upon the cattle keepers from Jongole to stop the harassment, the killing of innocent people, and to immediately return to their areas of origin in Jongole State. We call upon the national government to order the South Sudan Defense Forces to intervene and save the lives and the properties of the people of Eastern Equatorial State.
Lobong says state authorities will mobilize the young people of Eastern Equatorial State to defend and protect the people if South Sudan National Forces do not take action.
If the national government does not respond to our call, we will then see as a state to mobilize ourselves and mobilize the youth of Eastern Equatoria to protect and defend the people of Magui.
Governor Lobong says about 6,000 people have been displaced from their homes in Magui County as a result of the pastoralist attacks and are in desperate need of food and shelter. For VOA News, I am David Monodanga in Juba.
Signatories of South Sudan's 2018 peace agreement are yet to establish a special reconstruction fund as stipulated in the revitalized peace agreement. South Sudan's information minister says the transitional government of national unity has not established the fund. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
In an exclusive interview, Information Minister Michael Makwe tells South Sudan in Focus that work on establishing the Special Reconstruction Fund has yet to start because parties to the peace deal took a long time to set up several structures of the unity government, such as parliament.
It is because of this delay. Of course, these laws are not supposed to be passed by provisional orders, but be passed by the parliament. And as a result, they had to wait until the parliament is reconstituted. It is after the reconstitution immediately that the budget was tabled. And after all, before the budget was tabled, the parliament had to work on its parliamentary rules and regulations.
Chapter 3 of the peace deal stipulates that the unity government, in collaboration with the international partners and friends of South Sudan, establish a special fund for reconstruction. The agreement says funds should be managed by a board that should be drawn from the unity government and international partners. The board, which should be comprised of 30 members and chaired by an international member, was supposed to be formed within the first month of the transitional period. However, the executive has yet to start the process of establishing the fund, which must be approved by parliament. Makwe says the establishment of the leadership of the board of the Special Reconstruction Fund is one of the contents of the peace deal, which he says was imposed to the parties to the agreement, including the SPLM in government, to implement.
Reconstruction Fund, its membership is not only limited to South Sudan. It's not limited to South Sudan, and its composition and so forth. The chair and the deputy are foreigners. And this is what puzzles us. Because after all, is it that because South Sudan does not have the necessary qualified people to do the job, or is it because of what?
Ruben Madol Arol, South Sudan's Justice and Constitutional Affairs Minister, says the cabinet has yet to initiate the legal process of setting up the reconstruction fund.
Even then, how to initiate, must come from somewhere. When it comes to drafting the bill, that's where the Ministry of Justice has the role. I'm not aware of the bill that has been a resolution of the Council of Ministers that we need to use as the basis for drafting this bill that you're talking about.
Under provisions of the peace deal, the board of the Special Reconstruction Fund shall prepare a program and a detailed action plan for the reconstruction of conflict-affected states and other areas to guide the work of the fund. The agreement stipulates that the program shall include provision of assistance and protection to internally displaced persons, returnees, and families affected by the conflict, and shall be completed within 6 months in the administration of its establishment. The unity government shall fund reconstruction activities by allocating not less than $100 million per year for the transitional period, and shall cooperate with international donors in the administration of the pledges to the fund, according to the deal. Makwe says the government has yet to establish what he calls a peace budget for the year 2022-2023, which is supposed to pay for the establishment of the Special Reconstruction Fund.
The incoming budget that will be presented actually in May this year will also be presented. And this is the year where we will actually prepare to receive the returnees and repatriate the displaced people who are already here in South Sudan. this is budget, the government has the will, and of course, you, as I said it earlier, for the refugees, they are supposed to be repatriated in accordance or with their consent.
Aside from the Special Reconstruction Fund, the Revitalized Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission says the parties have yet to implement several other key tasks, including unifying the various forces into one national army, instituting public financial management reforms, and setting up transitional justice mechanisms. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
Authorities in the Greater Pibor administrative area say prices of basic commodities dropped after traders brought goods to the town through Eastern Equatoria State. The chairman of the Chamber of Commerce in Pibor says the national government should reopen the Juba-Pibor road to allow traders to bring goods to the area. Dengai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
The head of Pibor's Chamber of Commerce, Zakaria Nyiboy, says prices of food items and other basic commodities shot up after weeks of shortages in the area. Nyiboy says traders have had to supply the Pibor market through Eastern Equatoria State after the Juba-Pibor road was closed due to insecurity. He says prices dropped somewhat after food no longer had to be flown in but are still high.
A sack of flour was selling at 73,000, a sack of sugar for 73,000, bean 105,000, and a jerrycan of oil for 40,000 SSP. Now the trucks have arrived with goods and prices have dropped. Now a 50 kg sack of sugar and flour dropped to 42,000 SSP from 73,000. Some weeks ago, while 20 liters of oil decreased from 40,000 SSP to 28,000 SSP.
Nyiboy urges national officials in Juba to reopen the Juba-Pibor road, saying prices of basic commodities are still unaffordable for many local residents because of the long hauling distance from Eastern Equatoria State.
The issue of Juba-Pibor road is work of the government, the national government and the Pibor government. We are waiting for them because we don't want the civilian to fight themselves on the road. We have only this road through the desert now, and the chances that it may close and the situation will be bad again. So we call on the government to speed up its action of providing the safety for the traders along Juba-Pibor road.
Business owners are calling on the national government to intervene quickly so that traders can stock up on goods before heavy rains make the road impassable. Pibor government officials Nyang Korok says continuous closure of Juba-Pibor road has led to suffering among locals.
Although there is a drop in the price, our life in Pibor is difficult because of the road closure. Last time the Juba-Pibor road was closed by armed use from Bor, and it is still closed up to now. A road is a government property, so we do not understand why the national government is silent for this issue.
Locally, Amea, the chief administrator for the Greater Pibor Administrative Area, says he is engaging national police leaders in Juba to help provide escort for traders along the Juba-Pibor road.
I send a minister of local government and mayor. They tell them they meet. They say they will meet tomorrow to give a final solution tomorrow. If they give them escort or if it's not ready, they will let them know tomorrow.
Last month, Greater Pibor Administrative Area authorities said the market ran out of basic goods and prices shot up after the main road linking the Pibor town to Juba closed due to insecurity. For VOA News, I am Deng Guiding in Bor.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. As South Sudan joins the world in commemorating International Women's Month, some women in South Sudan's capital Juba say discrimination and unlawful treatment of women by police and immigration officers are too common at ports of entry in the country. Some of the women who spoke to this program say officers at Juba International Airport and Nimule border crossing points allegedly ask for a permission letter from women traveling with children. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Gloria Taban, a mother of a six-year-old boy, says she feels harassed whenever immigration officers at the airport ask her to present a letter from her son's father authorizing her to travel with him outside the country. Taban says she is a single parent who separated years back from her son's father, and ever since then she has shouldered the responsibility of caring for her son on her own. Taban says on one occasion immigration officers forced her to make phone calls to her son's father, or her child will not be allowed to travel back to school in Nairobi. Taban says she was saddened to learn her son's paternal uncles were the only ones to come and confirm that she wasn't trafficking her own child.
This is a deadbeat dad. I tried to reach out to him. His number was not going through. So he told me, no, now what you need to do, you need to reach out to the paternal side. If it's an uncle to this child of yours, it can be a brother, a cousin, brother. Reach out to that male to be the one to come, and you just see, look at how our patriarchal society is really of disadvantage. I have to reach out to a male. If it's not a male from the paternal side, my son was to be detained here until he misses that flight. Send them all documentation to show that I am not trafficking this child. But these people were not yet satisfied.
Christine Kide says she experienced similar treatment from immigration officers when she tries to travel with her child to Uganda for Christmas in 2020. Kide says she went to the passport and immigration office in Juba so she could process a temporary travel permit for her child, but was told by officers in charge she needed permission from her spouse. Kide says the officers refused to process her child travel permit, saying women have no authority to process a child legal documents.
Is there anything in our law talking about that? You're like, no, we don't have time for discussion. Just go and look for the father. There's no father. There's no temporary permit. I was frustrated, and I was supposed to travel the next day. So I had to call the dad, and he was in a very busy meeting. I told him that if at all you don't come and witness for this kid, there's no way he's going to travel. So they want us to get your approval for him to get a temporary permit.
Many women commenting on social media platforms have called such procedures at checkpoints barbaric and a violation of women's rights. They say mothers should be accorded all the rights of fathers who travel with their children. Civil rights activist Manasi Mathiang says he too faced questions at an immigration checkpoint when he was traveling with his then 4-year-old son in 2018. Mathiang says officers asked him to explain the whereabouts of his wife, then asked him to call the mother to verify what he said. Still, Mathiang agrees that South Sudan has been hostile towards women in general and says there is a need for clarity from Ministry of Interior regarding the rights of single mothers.
I think there needs to be clarity when it comes to what the law says, what is the right procedure, because this is something that women go through every day. I've had of relatives who are single mothers that have had a hard time traveling. The fathers of the kids are nowhere to be found, and they have to do a lot of explanations in the airport and all of that. It needs to be a bit more clear to the citizens what is the procedure.
The spokesperson of the South Sudan National Police Service, Major General Daniel Justin, says the restrictions have been stipulated in the Family and Migration Act. Justin says the laws applies to men and women, but most complaint they receive from fathers is that their wives have run away with their children. He says in South Sudan, many children are cared for by single mothers, which causes problem when women try to travel with their kids without the father.
When I come to the airport and you say it by your mouth that I am a single mother and all this, no. In South Sudan, we don't have this issue of single mother, you see. What we have is that a lady gets pregnant out of a lot of things, you know, for example, without knowing even the husband and so on. So here, the parents will take care of the mother as well as the child. See, but this is common to us. But if such a case and you want to travel, you have to go to immigration before and tell them this is 1-2. They will ask for your parents. At the same time, they will, if they are not convinced, they may ask the chief of your chief. He will come and testify.
Under Article 16, the South Sudan Passports and Immigration Act 2011, South Sudanese nationals and alliance holding non-diplomatic passports may not be allowed to depart South Sudan if the South Sudanese national is a minor and not in the company of his or her parent or guardian, or traveling without their written consent in the manner prescribed by regulation. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
We love to hear your feedback on stories in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Over to you, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We heard from many of you this week about our coverage of deadly violence involving cattle herders in eastern Equatoria State, like Peter Ajag Ayom in Block 3, Bor Town of Jungule State, who writes, "The conflict between farmers and cattle herders in eastern Equatoria should be a government concern. To resolve it peacefully or forcefully, urge the cattle keepers to leave Equatoria, who should go back to Jungule State, the original place. There is no need for people to kill themselves for nothing. I call it nothing because we all know cattle and crops can never be in the same place. Food is very important and cattle are very important too, but they are to be separated." Saber Isaac Hamis of Yambio in Western Equatoria State says, "Hello VOA South Sudan in Focus. It is just very unfortunate that we South Sudanese never respect any directive or order that comes from any of our leaders. Several times, our president passed presidential orders requesting all cattle keepers to evacuate the Equatoria region with their animals, but it falls on deaf ears. When shall we obey our leaders as South Sudanese? May the souls of the innocent who were killed in cold blood in eastern Equatoria State by cattle keepers rest in peace." Angoka Iwen Lueth from Gumbo Sherkat in Juba says, "Hello John Tanza and Nabil Biagio. It's of great sadness that the cattle raiding and revenge killings in South Sudan are becoming endless cycles of violence, with two graves dug from the two communities in Magui. We South Sudanese became all losers, for we all mourn the dead. Why can't we peacefully coexist for the mutual benefit? The government has to intervene, or else the conflict between farmers and cattle keepers will escalate. Condolences to the bereaved families." Martin Manuel Wugol in Uganda says, "Hello John and Nabil. Pastoralists and farmers must respect each other. If not, the government will come in and punish those intended to disturb peaceful coexistence of the people in eastern Equatoria State." Jacob Dior Machueng from Ural in Lake State says, "The relationship between the cattle keeping and farming communities in some parts of the country has not been good for the last 10 years. The cattle keepers need to be educated that the farmers play a vital role in food production and vice versa. Both must coexist without causing chaos like what has been happening in Greater Equatoria." Thok Chuni Yok Kwai from Juba says, "It's very sad news to hear the death of our people of South Sudan. It's very sad news to hear the death of our people of South Sudan every day in the country because of cattle. I'm hereby calling out South Sudanese leaders to graduate the forces in the training center for 2 years to stop killing themselves because of the cattle in the country." Ayenyak Dao in Kampala, Uganda says, "The cycle of revenge killings among cattle herders and local community in Magui County needs immediate intervention by both state and national governments in order to end the atrocities which have claimed scores of lives since the violence began this week." James Roy Majok from Unity State in Bantu Town says, "Hi Nabil and John Tanza. My condolences to the people of Eastern Equatoria State, especially Magui County, for the deaths of 5 people who were killed by unknown gunmen on Tuesday. And that's where I really blame Eastern Equatoria State authorities for failing to protect the people of Magui County. Unknown gunmen have run away with some cows and burned down a Magui County village. Garkwath Manong Chuang from Juba POC One says, "Hello Nabil and John Tanza. The intimidation of journalists has become a culture in South Sudan. I am very sad for what happened on Wednesday to iRadio editor Woja Emmanuel, who was kidnapped by unknown gunmen. It's something unfortunate and needs to be condemned by South Sudan government. I urge the government to investigate and bring the perpetrators to book because participating in journalism is not a crime." Garang from Juba writes, "The killing of three civilians in Lanya County and burning of MSF vehicles, the killing of a clinical officer in Yei River County by SSPDF soldiers are crimes against humanity. My condolences. May their souls rest in peace." Peter Goj Anyang Majongdul in Block 3 in Bortown says, "Speeding up the negotiations in Belarus is the only lasting solution to the ongoing crisis between Russia and Ukraine in order to stop the dying and fleeing populations since the onset of the conflict a week ago." Ajay Sam Hillary from Juba writes, "Allow me to express my gratitude to the parties involved in the peace accord for their commitment to the peace agreement through unification of the forces, which is as a result of intense pressure from the international community. However, the problem with this agreement is the lack of political will, trust, transparency, accountability, and readiness for peace. The push for elections in 2023 would be a mess, and it indicates the possible failure of this agreement since the major items haven't been met." Isaac Tang Dak of Bantu Town says, "I once read a proverb that said if you keep quiet in a crime, it amounts to taking part in it. For the countries to abstain from voting in neither favor nor against the UN resolution, which included South Sudan, is really unfortunate because we, the people, cannot vote for the so-called Russia who provided Omar al-Bashir with Antonovs that killed many during the civil war. Thank you, VOA." Mading Malwal Alwang from Malakal Town writes, "Our smiles after achieving our independence is meaningless to the youths who are fighting among ourselves. I thought the effort we have was to be used for daily activities to compensate our suffering during the struggle. I condemn communal conflict in the Republic of South Sudan. Citizens, you may have to define independence before you engage in such a crime. And many thanks to you, Nabil Biagio and John Tanza, for your tireless efforts on a daily basis." Joel McCare from Jamjang County of the Ruang Administrative Area says, "Hello South Sudan in Focus. It is very unfortunate for the South Sudan government to abstain from the UN General Assembly voting. Russia must be strongly condemned for attacking the sovereignty, territory, government and people of Ukraine." And finally, Mabor Alat Rengo in Rakmajok in Lake State says, "Hello John Tanza and Nabil. It's another brand new month. The year is moving slowly. The grenade death incident has become common in South Sudan. Movement of unprofessional soldiers with their dangerous ammunition from places of work to their homes is like keeping flammable objects near fire. The innocent children who do not know the dangers of these weapons may make contact with them, causing rampant deaths. Therefore, all the soldiers should keep their arms in the barracks." The comments heard here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us. Keep those comments coming.
Send your brief comments and we will sample some of your remarks every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now end this show with the song Nani Ongere by Colonel Mido.
Monya mijinga yara ehonanie
We have been listening to Colonel Mido and the song Nani Ongere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being with us this evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.